To begin the hour, we have a special guest in the studio, violinist Ilya Kaller. Ilya has a most impressive bio. He's the only violinist to win the 3 of the world's top violin competitions, receiving the gold medal in the Tchaikovsky, the Sibelius, and Paganini competitions. He's concertized all over the world and has taught at prestigious schools, including the Eastman School of Music, the Indiana University School of Music, and currently now at the Cleveland Institute of Music. Ilya, it's wonderful to meet you, and we are delighted to have you back here on the Midday Program. Oops, let me get your mic up. There we go. Now, you're here in Madison. You were here a couple of, not quite 2 years ago, if I recall.
I think it was 2 years ago when I performed the Tchaikovsky Concerto here with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. And I believe it's been 2 years.
It's 2 years now.
I'm happy to be back.
Well, I know that they are, because from what I read, the audience's response to your performance was so great that there was a demand to have you return here as soon as possible. And you'll be playing the
Paganini Second Concerto.
Yes, and I definitely want us to talk about that. But
absolutely,
if you don't mind, would you please share some of your memories of growing up in a family of musicians in Russia?
Yeah, actually, in my family in Soviet Russia, where I was born and raised, my father was a musician. I always say that my mother kind of balanced things out, and she was a normal person. She was a teacher at school. But she always loved music and so forth, never developed any of her musical skills or played any instrument, but mm-hmm. was very supportive, and that was very important, of course. But my father was a major influence on me when I was growing up in terms of exposure to classical music. He was a violinist in one of the major symphony orchestras in Moscow, Moscow Radio Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. And since my very early age, I was taken to many rehearsals and concerts and many recordings, because it was a radio orchestra, so I was present, and my father always would bring orchestral scores home. And when I was little and grew up, I never thought of myself just being to become a soloist or only a violinist. I thought of myself being a conductor, a composer, concertmaster of the orchestra. I mean, I imagined myself in all those different roles, and I think it helped to shape my musical mindset. So I never was limiting myself to just one instrument. But at some point, of course, you had to pledge your loyalty, and violin is a really very jealous instrument. If you don't spend enough time with it, you don't dedicate yourself, at some point it really hits back in a bad way. So at some point the die was cast, and I started studying violin, first with resistance, like any little child that resisted regular systematic practice, first under my father's supervision, mm-hmm. which it took a lot of help from him, I think. Yeah, and then eventually I developed, of course, taste for it, listened to some great recordings that inspired me, and a few years down the road, felt I could produce sound that I could tolerate myself. At the same time, I continued my piano studies, so I studied piano mm-hmm. as well, which is very helpful, of course, for any musician. Give you broader perspective of things. And then I studied in a very good school in Moscow, which was considered to be an elite school, Central Music School, which was kind of a preschool, if you can imagine, to the Moscow Conservatory. Mm-hmm. But it was a regular school with regular subjects. And, of course, music was a priority. So I studied violin and piano. And that was all in Moscow, of course. And I had the wonderful teachers, Zinaida Gilels, from a very famous musical family. And I studied with her for my first 11 years. And after that, I entered the Moscow Conservatory, studied with Leonid Kogan, who mm-hmm. was one of the greatest Soviet Russian violinists at the time, and continued with another great one, Viktor Tityakov. So those years were the years where I always say happened to win, because there's always a lottery. Happened to win 3 international competitions, and being a citizen of the Soviet Union, you couldn't really choose where you went. You had to be chosen and sent by the government.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Through, yes. Mm-hmm. You couldn't just go abroad. So you were representing the country mm-hmm. rather than yourself.
Of course.
So, and I was happened to be chosen 3 times. So first competition was a Paganini competition in mm-hmm. Genoa, in Italy. Of course, going to competition was preceded by several rounds of auditions, preliminary auditions that were held in Moscow, national, and so forth. So by the time we went with few of my colleagues, mm-hmm. my peers, to those competitions, we really knew our repertoire well, because we really ran through it many, many, many times. And Paganini competition, of course, if it's a very special competition because it happens in a city of Paganini's birth. And also, if you win the competition, you're given an honor to perform on his legendary violin, which is a Giuseppe Guarneri del Gesù in Canone. Yeah, I mean, Paganini owned, like many great violinists of the past, a lot of instruments through his life, but this one was held very unique place mm-hmm. in his heart and was his primary concert instrument for many years. So this is a very robust violin that is not played much on, unfortunately, and it's held in the municipality mm-hmm. of Genoa under the glass, and they take it out of the glass if some famous violinist comes and visits the city, or it's a winner of that competition. So I performed two Caprices by Paganini, I remember.
Oh, thrilling for you.
Having only 3 hours to get used to this mm-hmm. instrument, which was not easy, mm-hmm. especially considering the repertoire. I mean, you really have to know your violin before you play something virtuoso like mm-hmm. this. My next competition was in Helsinki that I participated in, Sibelius competition, where I actually shared first prize with Leonidas Kavakos, who was then 18 years old, and I was old. I was 21 at that point, and I remember I also got special prize for the Sibelius mm-hmm. Performance of Sibelius Concerto. And the third one, with every next competition, it of course was becoming more and more difficult, mm-hmm. because when you win one, the next you start competing with yourself. So, and the third one was the toughest for me. It was Tchaikovsky competition, not only because it was the third and thank God the last mm-hmm. last one, but also because it happened in my
of course in
my
Moscow.
Own city mm-hmm. where everybody every dog knew me, you might say. And of course I had my own friends, my own fans, my own adversaries and so forth. The whole thing was televised throughout 24/7, and so it was really like you were under this very close scrutiny mm-hmm. every note that you played. It was a very nerve-wracking experience, I have to say. And I felt incredible relief when I was done with it. And I even thought of taking a sabbatical for a year, and not performing, but there was no way I could do that because concert engagements poured in, and so I had to live up to the expectations. And started traveling while still being a student at the conservatory. I had to finish my degree and so forth. So, and by the end of 1980s, of course, situation in the Soviet Union deteriorated. And economically and socially, there were some very disturbing developments. You know, when things started opening up, obviously you mm-hmm. see things that you not necessarily like, and there were a lot of extremist trends in a society, and for me being Jewish, yeah, it was really disturbing.
What year was this?
It was in late 80s. Mm-hmm. And so I was already married, my first wife, and we had a child. And so I decided that I would explore a possibility of leaving the country and at least working for some time abroad. So through some motions and some connections that I made, I was able to secure the engagement as a visiting professor. Officially it was called Distinguished Visiting Professor, mm-hmm. Peabody Conservatory of Music.
Of course.
In Baltimore, mm-hmm. where I went in 1991. I always say that my departure was the last drop after which the country collapsed. That was the last nail that held it together. Yeah. So anyways, it was a very end of January of 1991. I went and I already knew I wouldn't come back. Mm-hmm. So I applied for permanent residence and mm-hmm. the rest of things is a history. Then, and so I stayed, mm-hmm. lived in Baltimore. Then I moved to New York and then to Rochester, where I was teaching at Eastman. I was concert master of the Philharmonic and so forth. The rest of what you know.
Oh, my goodness. No, that's thrilling to hear your story.
Right, you might say.
Well, I'm looking at the clock, and I definitely want our listeners to hear some sure. of your music. So I'll stop you here, but then we'll continue our conversation
Absolutely.
After. And this comes from a 2-CD set of music by Johann Sebastian Bach. And I thought we would listen to, well, the first track. It comes from the Sonata number 1 in G minor. It's the Adagio. Music of Johann Sebastian Bach. That was his first movement, the Adagio, from the Sonata number 1 in G minor, played by our guest here in the studio, Ilya Kahler. And we've been talking, Ilya, about the piece you'll be performing this evening with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. And that concert, by the way, will be at the Capitol Theater at 7:30 this evening at Overture. And the piece you'll be playing is the Paganini Violin Concerto
Number 2 in B minor, also known by the name of the last movement, by nickname, which is La Campanella.
Yes.
And his little bell, which is a kind of a legendary piece of music. Like his 24th Caprice for violin solo, it inspired a lot of composers to have their own take on it. I mean, the most famous one, of course, is a great transcription, piano transcription by Franz Liszt. So this concerto, I would say, is my favorite Paganini concerto. Paganini wrote total, I believe, 6, or even some people claim 7 concertos, but first and second are the best known, with first one being performed more often. And mostly because of the huge cadenza that Paganini actually himself didn't write. It was written by another great violinist, Emile Sauret, which is a very long cadenza. It's like a piece within the piece. But second concerto is really my favorite. I find maybe part of it is that interesting key, B minor. It gives this music a little bit of a melancholic edge and color. And I think it's really beautifully written in terms of these melodic lines and use of technique, which is so craftily incorporated into those melodic lines. So I think the challenge for a soloist here, not to turn those fast, difficult sections with double stops and passages into simply acrobatics, but to really make them melodic. I think that's what I'm striving to do. Second movement is absolutely divinely beautiful. It's one of the most inspired, I think, essays of Paganini. Fantastic, with very simple pizzicato accompaniment and beautiful embellishing figures. This absolutely ravishingly beautiful tune unfolds, and it's written with such fantastic knowledge of the instrument, obviously. And we can only speculate on how Paganini himself performed it and how he sounded. It was so long ago, there are no any kind of sound documents. Some things probably would disappoint us, some things would fascinate us, obviously. And I think playing piece like that, like in case of other great violinist composers, playing their works. I mean, people like Ernst, Wieniawski, Vietin, Isaïe, Kreisler, it means you don't just perform a great piece of music, but you also have an insight into a violinistic style of those people. So they wrote, of course, those pieces first and foremost for themselves. They were vehicles for them to demonstrate their skill, their artistry, and so forth, their instrumental control. And you have to really study carefully the text, how it's written, even suggested fingering. Sometimes you find those hints and bowings because they're a reflection of the unique styles of those people. Also, despite of huge differences in style among those great artists that composed, it's a great tradition that kind of went away, unfortunately, today. Despite of differences, you become aware of such intimate knowledge of the instrument that most of those most difficult moments are still very much comfortable for you as a performer. Because they chose keys, they wrote their passage work in such a way that somehow your hands remember easily, as opposed to some other great works like Brahms Concerto, for example, or even Tchaikovsky Concerto that I performed here. It took a lot of work on the part of their great friends, colleagues, great soloists who collaborated with them to make those works more digestible, quote-unquote, for an instrumentalist. It's known that Joachim was a very close associate of Brahms and worked and helped and even insisted on Brahms changing certain passages which were completely written not for, but against violin. The same can be said about somebody like Karol Szymanowski, who was also a great composer, wrote 2 concertos for violin and was a pianist himself. But his friend, Paul Kochanski, who was a great violinist, collaborated and even wrote cadenza for one of his concertos. So this he gave a lot of hints and advice to how you write for violin. And somebody like Stravinsky wrote his concerto, and without help of Samuel Dushkin, for whom concerto was written, probably it would be completely unplayable. So he would come to Dushkin, for example, and say, well, is this chord and played on a piano is possible in a violin? Says, barely, but I can think of something. So I think in case of Paganini, those problems don't exist. It is very challenging, very difficult, sometimes finger-breaking piece,
but still it's, you know, it's written by somebody who knows violin upside down.
It's comfortable.
The problem with Paganini sometimes, and not so much in this piece, but in some of his caprices, is that Paganini notoriously had this medical condition called Morfan's disease, which is abnormal joint condition in which he could stretch his fingers beyond beyond any normal human hand, even big one. So that's why for many violinists, even very good ones, but with smaller hands, those things are nearly impossible to tackle and so forth. But you can hear in that concerto a lot of those big stretches, intervals of tenth, of course, a lot of double stopping and so forth. But generally it's written first and foremost, I think, with beauty in mind, with elegance. Mm-hmm. This is, to me, most of all, it's very heartwarming, elegant, melancholic, and brilliantly written music. And this is what, those are features that I'm trying to bring out.
It sounds wonderful. Oh, my goodness. And people who are excited to have you back are very, can't wait for this evening's concert. It will take place at the Capitol Theater, the 7:30 this evening. Ilya, it's just been so wonderful having you here with us to talk about your background and the works that you'll be playing. Just curious, when you are on the road, what you have to do to maintain, and what do you have a certain exercises or something that you do to before performance? Especially, we're lucky that the snowstorm is behind us.
But right.
Sometimes I'm sure when you are traveling,
I don't have any routine against that.
Exactly. Yeah. But you know, if you come yes. in late to a certain place where you have to perform, how is it that you prepare?
Well, it's, first of all, it's a mental preparation, of course, but also you have to keep yourself in shape, which is very difficult. Having concert schedule and also teaching full-time mm-hmm. at the university or conservatory, obviously, because there's a lot of things that come with it. There's a constant communication. We live in an era, I think, where there's no difference between home and work. I mean, it's all you work mm-hmm. constantly. And so you have the many things going on in my mind. I'm thinking of my performance. Sometimes I just spend a few minutes with the music thinking, imagining, humming mm-hmm. inside myself. Mm-hmm. What would happen with... It's very helpful for me with no instrument, because my only routine really is a very standard. I just play scales. Mm-hmm. I find this the most helpful. Or take very difficult spots from piece and play them very slowly a number of times and kind of thinking, anticipating things. So you have to really know how to use time, because there's very little of it to really practice. There's no any more time practice 6-7 hours a day, obviously. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. No, if I wish we had more time to talk to you, because I you have such a fascinating background, and just to hear the more about where you've been and your interest in teaching, has that been, are you bring to your students, of course, this background from Russia and from the Moscow Conservatory. Can you just tell us maybe in a couple minutes what it's like to be a teacher here in the United States, and their background of,
yeah.
is there a...
Well, I don't have previous teaching experience before I came to this mm-hmm. country. I started my teaching career in the United States, so that's my only experience. Sometimes mm-hmm. I hear stories from my colleagues, because when I was a student, we didn't really think of how the whole system worked in a conservatory. So some things are very surprising for me. Looked recently at the website, Moscow Conservatory, and the list of teachers there, it's like a phone book. So I don't quite understand how it worked. So I find this system is very, very efficient and effective. But I say that teaching is very important. It's been said by many, and I just can only repeat that for concert artists, teaching is like a laboratory. You challenged to explain problems, to fix them. So you're being a psychologist, you're being a doctor at mm-hmm. the same time, a trainer, and just simply a cheerleader sometimes for your students. And of course, you have to clearly formulate your ideas, demonstrate. And I don't believe in kind of a mass systems of teaching when you apply the same pattern of mm-hmm. teaching to different people. It just doesn't work that way mm-hmm. because everybody has different learning pattern and a different ability to process and absorb new information. So you have to be constantly on your toes. You can't just sit there and say the same things to every student, you know. So this is fascinating, and it keeps me, I think, alert most of the time.
I'm sure it does. Well, yeah. I thank you so much for making the time to be with us here. We're going to listen to another one of your performances, the Waltz-Scherzo by Tchaikovsky. And again, just to repeat, so our listeners, in case you are free this evening, this is a concert you do not want to miss, featuring violinist Ilya Kaler performing the Paganini Violin Concerto No. 2. And this will be at the Overture Center Capitol Theater this evening at 7:30 with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra.